still see this guy, but...
Okay. Battery's good.
I've never met him, and he has never responded to my emails.
Shoot, that is...
Is everything ready?
Yeah, I think so.
Great. Okay, I'll go ahead and get started at the moment. So today, as indicated by the title of the talk, I'm going to talk about Frobenius algebras and TQFTs. TQFT here stands for topological quantum field theory. These are big words, but I'm going to explain what all of them are, at least in the case that we're going to care about. So the point of this talk is a Frobenius algebra is an algebraic object. It's right there in the name, algebra. A TQFT is a topological object, topological field theory. It's right there in the name. And so the big theorem in this talk is going to be a proof of equivalence of commutative Frobenius algebras and a certain TQFTs in dimension 2. And that's going to be, so this is not just, oh, algebra is the same thing as geometry, like it always is in mathematics. But in this proof, you literally build the algebra out of the topology and the geometry. And so for that reason, I think it's kind of cool. And it's also convenient that it doesn't require that much fancy technology to do. And in particular, it can be explained to undergrads, which is always a good thing. So there's this book by Joachim Koch called Frobenius Algebras and Two-Dimensional TQFTs. There's also a set of lecture notes on his website covering the same material. So if you find this stuff interesting, I encourage you to check it out. He goes into more detail and probably will make fewer mistakes. So first, let's talk about topological quantum field theories. So this sounds like it should be physics, but it isn't. In fact, it's possible to define this entirely mathematically with what's called the Atiyah-Siegel axioms. And we're only going to need a specific example, which is dimension 2. So I'm going to start with the closed 1 manifolds, which are, if you like physics, these are the space spaces of this theory as opposed to space-times, but I don't really like physics, so I don't know too much about that. So we start off with closed 1 manifolds, and this means curves that are finite length, that are smooth, and let's see, anything else? Oh, and they're oriented. We also don't want them to have a boundary. So here's an example. Here's another example. The empty set is also an example. I guess it'd be called the empty curve. And so that's one closed one manifolds. We also need to talk about bordisms. A bordism between two manifolds is another manifold of one dimension higher whose boundary is those two manifolds. So I start with this manifold, this closed one manifold, and I end with this closed one manifold. And a bordism is where I fill in something between them. So you can see this is some sort of surface with boundary. And its boundary is this disjoint union this. So that's a bordism, x from m to n. So it's written x goes from m to n. And what this means is that I've identified the boundary of x with m disjoint union n. So this particular bordism looks like a pair of pants and is called the pair of pants bordism. This is one of these things in mathematics that is funny, apparently. I think it's not just that it's like a pair of pants bordism, but everything else gets called pants. Like if you're decomposing a surface into a bunch of pairs of pants, it's called a pants decomposition. You can like invert the pair of pants, you can twist it. There are all sorts of fun things. This is a great case for topology. So the idea with TQFTs is we'll start out by defining states on closed one manifolds, and Bordisms correspond to some sort of evolution of time. So in this case, space-time kind of bubbles off at some point into two pieces, which is a little weird. But because I'm not a physicist, and this is useful for me mathematically, I'm not going to think about the physics of it. But instead, I'm going to talk about how this induces some evolution from the states on N to the states on N. So the really awesome property about Bordisms is that they glue. So let's say I have this first Bordism X, and now I'm going to make a second Bordism to a third one manifold. And this is Y from N to N prime. So I have one Bordism starting at M and ending at N, and I have a second Bordism starting at N, ending at N prime. But I can glue them together by just forgetting about N. And what I've ended up with is a Bordism from M to N prime. Yeah?
Isn't this a cobordism instead of a Bordism?
So that is a good question. And the answer is, sure. But the reason people say Bordisms rather than cobordisms has to do with cohomology theories. And so Bordism would refer to the homology theory, and cobordism would refer to the cohomology theory. And yes, sure, you can call it that too. But I learned to call this a Bordism. And it's, I think either one will be understood. Okay, any other questions at this point? Everyone's still on board? No pun intended? Okay, so I have closed one manifolds, I have Bordisms between them, and I can glue Bordisms. Those of you that like categories may have already noticed what's happening here, but we're not going to talk too much in detail about that. So a good question to ask is, when are two Bordisms the same? And the answer is, whenever I can deform one to the other while fixing the endpoints. So for example, let's say I have a pair of pants. Well, I guess I do, but let's say I have a pair of pants Bordism. And then I take a cylinder and a cap. So the cap is just a disc, which I sort of turned into the lower hemisphere and stuck on the end of that. So my incoming manifold is just this circle, which is denoted S1. And my outgoing manifold is just this circle, S1. So the idea of when is this the same is I should be able to, as long as I can deform this smoothly, so if you recognize the word, it's diffeomorphism, fixing these endpoints. Well, so let's do that. This is just some sort of protrusion. So I'm going to push it back and push it back. And so what I've obtained is just the cylinder Bordism. The cylinder has an incoming component, which is a circle, and an outgoing component, which is a circle. So it's going to be very important that two Bordisms are the same, not if they're the same surface, but if I can identify them with a diffeomorphism fixing the endpoints. Okay, so with this structure, it's possible to define a 2D topological quantum field theory. I guess another important point is that everything so far is oriented. I'm not drawing that in because that's a lot of things to draw. But it's important for some of the subtle details that that happen in this. So, for example, the Klein bottle is not an acceptable Bordism because it's not orientable. So, a 2D TQFT, which I'm generally going to call Z, is, it's the following data. So, I start with so to every closed one manifold, we get a state space. Which is a vector space. And to every boardism, I'm going to call x from m to n, which means that x, you know, just like this, starts with m, ends with n. I get a linear map, which I'm going to call z of x, and it goes from the space z of m to the space z of n. So if I pick a basis of these things, then this is just a matrix. And I need to add a couple conditions. So the first is called functoriality. And that says that if I glue two boardisms together, I compose their linear maps. So this gluing is denoted x disjoint union along n, y. And I'm so this stipulation along n is that the linear map defined by this is the linear map of y composed with the linear map of x. So again, if you do pick bases and make everything a matrix, then this is matrix multiplication. So it's a reasonably concrete condition. The second is what is called multiplicativity, or sometimes the monoidal axiom, or whatnot. And this is a bunch of related axioms. The empty set as a one manifold must be sent to the base field, which I've chosen the real numbers because that's what everyone's probably the most familiar with. But if you want to do this over the complex numbers or over any other field or ring and use modules instead of vector spaces, that's fine. But vector spaces, empty set, the empty one manifold goes to the real numbers. The empty boardism, which must go from the empty set to itself, is sent to the identity map from R to itself. And correspondingly, Z must send disjoint union to tensor product. If you haven't seen tensor product, then what this is I take this vector. It's in the same way that the direct sum of vector spaces or the Cartesian product. If I start with the basis here and I start with the basis here, then I take the union of those bases to get the direct sum. For the tensor product, I take the set of all ordered pairs of a basis vector here and a basis vector here, and that generates this basis. So this, if z of m has dimension a and z of n has dimension b, then this tensor product has the product ab as its dimension. This is not the property that, this is not really the best way to define it, but it's the least complicated. And similarly for boardisms, I can take the tensor product of linear maps, and I'd like it to, if I take a boardism which is a disjoint union of simpler boardisms, I'd like it that the linear map which this boardism defines is the tensor product of the one for this one and the one for this one. So this is a sort of elementary way of defining this. There's a more concise way of defining this, which is somehow less illuminating, but maybe more precise. So that I'm going to say this very quickly, and if you don't understand it, that's totally fine. So boardisms, as we've noticed, we have an identity boardism, which is the cylinder. It sort of doesn't do anything, and when I glue with it, I get back what I started, because I can just contract it. And moreover, I have gluing, which is a sort of composition of boardisms. So there is actually a category whose objects are n R1 manifolds, or more generally, n manifolds for any n, and whose morphisms are boardisms, with gluing being the composition of morphisms. So it's a category. Under disjoint union, it's what's called a symmetric monoidal category, meaning it has something like a multiplication structure, but it's a category. So in that regard, I can also form a different category, which is real vector spaces, and which is monoidal under tensor product. So under that framework, a topological quantum field theory is a symmetric monoidal functor from this boardism category to the category of real vector spaces. And of course, I can replace R with C or with whatever. C is the most common choice. So that's the highbrow definition of a TQFT. And this is the one that may be lowbrow, but at least it's easier to see what's actually going on. Does anyone have any questions at this point? Okay. So let's see. This is a lot of data to every closed one manifold, to every Bordism. So in practice, to define a TQFT, we like to define it on some sort of like generators and check that they satisfy some relations. And so that's an algebraic idea, but already it's being implemented in a topological context. What is a generate? What are relations of Bordisms? So the first thing you can check is that if two one manifolds are diffeomorphic, then they're going to have the same what's it called? The same state space. So this is a circle. These are both circles because this is topology. So to this one and to this one, I must get the same state space. And the reason that is I can define a map between them, which is this cylinder Bordism. I can define maps going in both directions and another map back to this weird circle, not a geometric circle, but a topological circle. And because it's a cylinder, it has to be the identity because I can contract it. So for this reason, what I've really done is I've only said to every diffeomorphism type of smooth manifolds, which is really a topological fact. So every smooth one manifold is a disjoint union of circles. The empty set would be a disjoint union of zero circles, but I don't know if we're scholars of the empty set, so we're just going to think about there's the empty set, there's a circle, there's two circles, there's three circles, etc. And we only consider finitely many because we need our curves to have finite length. So the axioms of a TQFT tell us that we know that that evaluated on the empty set, we have to get R. And on the circle we don't know, we get Z of S1. But for the disjoint union of two circles, we get this evaluator on the circle, tensor evaluator on the other circle. So Z of S1 to the second tensor power, Z of S1 to the third tensor power, etc. In other words, as soon as you tell me what Z of S1 is, I know the TQFT on all smooth one manifolds. So that's great, because instead of infinitely many pieces of information, we need one piece of information. The next thing we're going to tackle is Bordisms. So technical result from the classification of surfaces, which I'm not going to get into, is that every connected surface has some number of, has some number of boundary components. And then it might have a bunch of holes. We don't know how many. And then maybe some more boundary components. So the idea is that every connected surface with boundary that is oriented is characterized by its genus, which is the number of holes, which is finite, and the number of boundary components. And for a Bordism, we care which ones are incoming and which ones are outgoing, because that tells us whether it's a Bordism from M to N or from N to M. So every connected Bordism is determined by number of holes, number of incoming, and number of outgoing boundary components. And the same way as for disjoint unions of circles, if it's a disjoint union of disconnected Bordisms, then it's a tensor product of each of those. So to determine a TQFT, it suffices to figure out what happens to these things. And here we can use the functoriality axiom, which says that we can cut this up. So I'm going to cut this up into a pair of pants plus this other more complicated thing, and then this is another pair of pants. So I'm going to cut that up, and I'm allowed to do this up to, because this is diffeomorphic, and then there's another pair of pants, and then another pair of pants, and so on. So there's a whole bunch of pairs of pants, and then there's these holes. So I'm going to chop that up. And then I have a bunch more pairs of pants in the opposite direction. So in some sense, by gluing pairs of pants together, I can get something which looks like a pair of pants but has a lot more leg holes. Applications outside of topology, possible. So now we've sort of decided that there's some these generating wordisms, and we haven't gotten all of them, but there's the incoming and outgoing pairs of pants. Next, we have to worry about the stuff in the middle, which was this thing. It's like a donut, but with ends. Ah, but if I slice it, then it's a pair of pants and a pair of pants. So that's all very nice. These generate almost all the information. But what if we had no boundary on this side, which would be a bordism from the circle to the empty set? So now we need to add a couple more pieces of information, the incoming disk and the outgoing disk, which are bordisms. So the disk, I sort of take it and curl it up into a hemisphere and then stick it like that. So this is a bordism from the empty one manifold to the circle, and this one goes from the circle to the empty one manifold. So these actually generate everything. These are the generating bordisms, in that if you know what the TQFT does on these four things, you can figure it out on any bordism just by gluing these together into fancier surfaces and then taking disjoint unions. So that's all good, but there's a couple, like this is technically too much information. It's overdetermined. So there are also some relations. So we've already seen one, which is that the cylinder is mapped to the identity. And that's because if I take some fancy bordism and then I add a cylinder to it, well, I only care about bordisms are the same if I can move this around, I can sort of contract this while fixing the endpoints. But this is a pair of pants. This is a weird pair of pants, maybe fashionable, I don't know. But it's the same. So because of this, the cylinder can't do anything. It has to go to the identity. Because adding on a cylinder doesn't change anything. So there's a couple more, which is let's say I take a pair of pants and I attach a disc. So I take the outgoing disc and I stick it on here. So now, this is just the same as it's a cylinder with like some other stuff on it. But this is, you know, I can just sort of, since I'm allowed to do rubber sheet geometry, so to speak, topologically speaking, a cylinder with a bubble in it that has no holes, just a curve, is just a cylinder. Now, similarly, I could put this disc right here and nothing else changes. I could do the same thing with a pair of pants going in the opposite direction. This time I put in an incoming disc and append it to an incoming pair of pants. So when I do this, capping with one of these caps gives me back the cylinder. So what this says is that if I take Z applied to this pair of pants and I take Z applied to this disc, and I compose them, because that's what gluing does, then what I end up with has to be the identity. So there's two more relations, and then we'll be on to Frobenius algebras, at which point I may need to speak faster. Okay, so next is associativity, which says if I have a pair of pants with three pant legs, it doesn't matter what order I consider the pant legs in, which is kind of true physically, but it doesn't really make a lot of sense. So with this, for example, I take a pair of pants and I take another pair of pants, and then I just take a cylinder here just to make sure it's all glued together. This is the same bordism as this sort of not quite menorah, or maybe it looks like a saguaro. And this is the same as if I applied the pair of pants to the bottom two first. By the way, are these pictures making sense? I feel like, well, I was never an artist, but I want to make sure that everyone is like able to follow. Okay. So, pair of pants, I can collapse this into the 3-in-1 and then put the 2 on this side on the bottom rather than on the top. And I can flip this around for the outgoing pair of pants and I get exactly the same story. Okay. So there's one last relation, which is called the Frobenius relation. That was some interesting unintentional foreshadowing, because I'm about to talk about Frobenius algebras, which says that if I do this, so this S that we all made in like elementary school or whatever is actually a Bordism, which is very exciting. So this is really just, like topologically, there's nothing going on. There's no holes. There's just 2 incoming components, 2 outgoing components. And then I can do this in the other direction too, which I guess would be a Z. So what this says is, if I undergo on the TQFTZ, of applying to the incoming pair of pants, then the outgoing pair of pants is the same as if I sort of shift the degree. So I take the incoming pair of pants, then I like shift it over and apply it only on one side with the identity on the other side. So this is a condition on TQFTs. In other words, this TQFT, so a TQFT, which we defined as being a lot of data, is really just the data of Z of S1 and the data on these 4 Bordisms with a bunch of compatibility conditions, but really not that many. So this is good, because if you want to actually write down a TQFT, you can do so by checking like 4 or 5 conditions. Okay. Is everyone still on board? Are there any questions? Okay, I'm going to talk about Frobenius algebras now. So for those of you who hate topology, which is unfortunate but understandable, then here is the purely algebraic part. Some of you might also not like algebra, and that's just too bad. So Frobenius algebra is a kind of algebra. I'm going to consider commutative. So let's start with a real vector space. And then to that, I add the data of multiplication on A. And so again, if you're not familiar with tensor products, what this really is a bilinear map from A cross A to A. And that is the secret. That is the superpower of the tensor product. It turns bilinear maps into linear ones. But the point is, I have multiplication, which is just it takes 2 things and it spits out 1. I have an identity for the multiplication, and I have what's called an inner product. So inner product generalizes the dot product. So these are required to satisfy some conditions. Multiplication has to be associative, and it has to be commutative. The identity has to be an identity for multiplication, which I already said. The inner product has to be non-degenerate. So in other words, if sigma of VW equals 0 for all W, then V equals 0. This property also describes dot products. Finally, we also ask that the inner product is compatible with multiplication. So I'm just going to write multiplication as UV, meaning M of UV. OK. So this is modeled on the algebra of matrices, which the set of n by n matrices over the real numbers is a real vector space because I can add and scale and multiply matrices. It has matrix multiplication, it has an identity, and it has the inner product of A and B is the trace of their product. And this satisfies a cyclic relation like this, ultimately because multiplication is associated. However, we're only going to consider commutative Frobenius algebras, so we would have to throw out the matrix algebra example. I will give you two bona fide examples, however. So complex numbers. This is a two-dimensional real vector space. I can multiply. Oh, I should have mentioned, these have to be linear maps. But everything in the world of vector space is true. So complex numbers with its usual multiplication, its usual identity, which is 1, and the inner product a plus bi, c plus di, to ac plus bd. Another example is if you like representation theory, then given a finite group G, then I can take the set of class functions, which is often denoted R adjoint G mod G, and this is the functions on the conjugacy classes of G. So this has a convolution-like product, and it has an inner product defined by the irreducible characters of these representations. So if you like representation theory, this is probably the reason you like Frobenius algebras, and if not, that's okay. So the important example is if Z is a TQFT, Z of S1 is a Frobenius algebra. We're going to do this by first giving the data and then checking the axioms. So multiplication is what Z does to the pair of pants. Because this is a map from Z of S1, tensor Z of S1, to Z of S1, and it's linear as desired. So I can define a multiplication map. Oh, I'm sorry, I said something wrong. The inner product should be real valued, just like the dot product is a number. Sorry about that. So the identity. Let's take the incoming disk, which is a bordism from the Z of the empty set, which is the real numbers, into Z of S1. And I'm going to say that, let's say it maps 1 to something. I mean, it has to, and I'm going to call that my identity. Finally, inner product is what Z does to this elbow macaroni bordism, which is topologically the pair of pants followed by an outgoing disk. So this goes from Z of S1 times Z of S1 to R. Great. Now we need to check the conditions. Well, for objects I just erased, for smooth one manifolds I just erased, but we only need to define it on Z of S1, and afterwards we automatically get it for every other closed one manifold. So we need to check that this works for bordisms. So what's the first thing? Multiplication needs to be associative. Well, would you look at that? What this says is that if I multiply M of A, M of BC is equal to M of AB, C. So it doesn't matter what order I multiply because these bordisms are the same. This is the part of the thing that's so cool about this. Is okay, yeah, I can do stuff with TQFTs, and yeah, sure, this is diffeomorphic to that. And yeah, sure, I can do some algebra. But really, this algebra is that topology. That's what's really interesting about this to me. We also want this to be commutative. And that follows because this bordism, let's say I switch the order before multiplying. Well, I can sort of untwist this. And this is the same Bordism as multiplication, right? Because I can just sort of pick this up and rotate it, and then I get no twisting. So because of this, multiplication of AB is equal to multiplication of BA. So for this reason, multiplication is commutative because of this topology. So the next question is, what happens when we multiply with the identity? The identity really should be the identity for multiplication. So what this says is that if I multiply the identity times anything else, because what I've done is I've supplied the identity as one of the arguments for multiplication. Well, this is, and so I've placed V there. Well, this is the same as the cylinder, right? So I've placed V here, and the identity sort of goes away. In other words, what I get out is V. So this is, multiplying by the identity gives me the identity, as it should. So the next axiom is served. The next thing that we have to check is what is called is that the inner product is non-degenerate. So this one is great because it comes from something called the S diagram, the Z diagram, the snake diagram, or most excitingly, the mark of Zorro. So what this is a composition of Bordisms that looks like this. And you can see, if you are Zorro, the brave swordsman, you defeat your enemy, the terrible topological quantum field theory, and you inscribe your mark upon it, big Z, just like in that old TV show. If I fix the endpoints, I just have one incoming circle, one outgoing circle, and no holes. So this is the cylinder. But as a Bordism, it is all. So what Z does to this is it becomes the map V tensor R, which is just V, to V tensor V tensor V to R tensor V. And here V is what Z does to S1. So in this case, the first map is the identity followed by sigma. The identity followed by Z of this Bordism, which is sometimes called co-evaluation. And this map is sigma followed by and the identity in the last argument. So let's suppose that sigma of V evaluated on anything is equal to 0. So in that case, let's see what happens if I start with V. So I start with V tensor 1, and I map to whatever co-evaluation does to 1. I don't really care. So I get V tensor W1 tensor W2. And now I apply sigma to these two arguments. So in other words, then I get 0 tensor W1. Okay. But this Bordism is the identity Bordism. So this map has to be the identity map. So in other words, V is equal to 0. So this diagram, whatever you prefer to call it, I like the mark of Zorro, and is useful to prove the non-degeneracy of the inner product. And sometimes that result itself is called Zorro's lemma, at least by David Benzvi, hopefully by other people. Okay. So that's... and we have one last axiom. So let's apply the inner product, which I do by drawing this picture, to multiplication. So that this represents sigma of U dot V, W, right? By the way, is everyone able to see over here? Okay, great. Well, this is just this. It's like I've taken my hands and I've sort of sewn up the waist part. But then I can totally pick I evaluate the other side first. Right? So these are all the same Bordism. So Z, the TQFT, has to assign the same thing to each of them. And therefore, we conclude that sigma of U dot VW is equal to sigma of U V dot W. So in other words, whatever this TQFT is, by the properties of a TQFT, we're forced to conclude that we have a structure on Z of S1, which is a Frobenius algebra. So that's already kind of interesting. Are there any questions at this point? Okay, cool. In that case, I'm going to go ahead and do the rest of the argument, which is the full proof of equivalence. We've shown that given a TQFT, we get a Frobenius algebra. Now we'd like to go backwards and get the same TQFT we started with.
Sorry, one thing actually. What does the Frobenius relation do?
This thing?
No, like the thing you wrote.
The Frobenius relation.
Is that going to come into play here?
So we don't need it yet. So I think what that does is that helps us recover that, like, I think it gives us a uniqueness thing. I don't remember precisely. Sorry. It'll help us prove. I don't know. We might get it for free. So some of this is a little redundant, but it's usually the Frobenius relation gives us associativity and co-associativity rather than the other way around. So I should know the answer to that question. Any other questions? So the form in which I'm saying this is that it's a bijective equivalence between 2D-oriented TQFTs and Frobenius algebras. So this can be made considerably more general. To be precise, first of all, I could replace the real numbers with my favorite ring or field and consider Frobenius algebras over those vector spaces or modules over that field or ring. I could replace it with an arbitrary symmetric monoidal category and the notion of a Frobenius object in that category. In particular, it's also possible to replace this bijective equivalence with a legitimate equivalence of categories, and moreover, an equivalence of categories that respects the symmetric monoidal structure. Again, if you don't know what that means, totally cool, but if you do know what it means, maybe it's helpful. So we've defined a Frobenius algebra given a TQFT. Now let's show why, given a Frobenius algebra A, we get a TQFT. So I'm going to define a TQFT Z sub A. And remember, even though I erased the relations, it suffices to define this on the circle and on four bordisms, the incoming and outgoing disks and pairs of pants, and then check a bunch of relations. So actually, let's just define that over here. So on the sphere, I just say I'm going to get A itself as a vector space. And I'm forced to conclude that on the empty set, I get the real numbers. Pair of pants becomes multiplication. We're just doing the same thing in reverse. Multiplication becomes the pair of pants. Now I need to define the outgoing pair of pants. And this uses the fact that I have sigma around. So sigma is an inner product, which means I can take adjoints with respect to this inner product. Geometrically, what that does is I have this bordism. This is what happens if I apply sigma to one of the outputs of this incoming pair of pants. But this is diffeomorphic to two inputs, one output, no holes. So in other words, capping off with the elbow macaroni that defines sigma is going to be, allows us to take adjoints. In linear algebra, if you have a basis, it's more common to call an adjoint the transpose. It's a matrix that goes in the other direction. Instead of Rn to Rm, it's Rm to Rn. And it's not an inverse, but it's dual in a sense. OK. So that's not an explicit definition, but it's enough information to define it. So that's good. Now let's define the incoming disk to be the map sending lambda to lambda times the identity. And the outgoing disk will be adjoint, so again, the transpose, to what we gave the incoming disk. In other words, if you cap the incoming disk with the inner product, what you get is an outgoing disk, when I sort of like straighten this out and like press it down. OK, so this could suffice to define a TQFT, and we need to check that it does. I'm going to be quick, which is unfortunate, because this is the part where being precise might be helpful. So there's only about, do I go until 55 or 50 or the hour?
The hour.
OK, then I'll go slightly less quickly. So now the relations. So the first one is that if I cap off a pair of pants with an incoming disk, then I get the identity. So this is forced to be true, because if I take v here, and then now I'm forced to take 1 here. And z is defined to say that z of this thing is the multiplication map of v and 1, which is just v, because that's what the identity is defined to do. The same relation in the other direction follows when I just formally take the adjoint of this. So now I need to satisfy associativity. But this is true because multiplication is associative. We also need to satisfy co-associativity, which is associativity for the outgoing pair of pants. And that will follow for the same reason. After I take an adjoint of this entire diagram, and I get associativity for the other pair of pants. So finally, we need to check the Frobenius relation, which is the one I'm most likely to get wrong, but here goes nothing. So I want to check that this is equal to this after applying ZA. So the way I'm going to check this is a little tricky. So what this says is that adjoint of multiplication followed by multiplication is the same as if I sort of shift them off of each other. Well, let's cap with the inner product again. Because after all, I don't know anything else about this map other than it's the adjoint. So I'm just going to take the inner product of one of its arguments with some specified third argument. And I'm going to do the same thing for the second argument out here. I'm going to take the inner product. And that's OK, because we know the inner product is non-degenerate because we started with a Frobenius algebra, and we want to use that somehow. So it turns out taking the inner product with it, when it's non-degenerate does not lose any information if I'm allowed to do it with all vectors in general. So if these are equal, then they're still equal once I erase these elbow macaronis. Great. Well, let's see. What is this? This is 3 incoming, 1 outgoing. And there's no holes. And what's this? Well, this is 3 incoming and 1 outgoing and no holes. So this says that, this is a bunch of pictures, and you're probably wondering, well, where's the Frobenius algebra? But what this says is that if I define the incoming pair of pants to be the, to have as its map the adjoint to the or the transpose to the map of multiplication, then I can use the inner product to prove that that satisfies the Frobenius relation, and therefore that Z sub A is a topological quantum field theory. So now we have arrows going in both directions. Why is this the ident? Why is the inverse? Why does, if I start with A as Z of S1, why do I get back my original Z? So it suffices to describe, well, on objects, I know that Z of S1 is, sorry, let me say that again, because I bet it didn't make very much sense. So, are these inverses? So if A is Z of S1, then ZA agrees with Z on S1, kind of tautologically, and therefore, by the multiplicativity axiom, it agrees on all closed 1 manifolds, because it suffices to determine on Z of S1. Because we chose 4 generators for the Bordisms, then we only need to check on the 4 generators, incoming and outgoing pair of pants. So we defined the Frobenius algebra structure on Z of S1 says that Z of the pair of pants is multiplication, which is equal to ZA of the pair of pants. So the multiplication is the same. And therefore, these agree on the pair of pants. This also implies they agree on the outgoing pair of pants, or sorry, incoming pair of pants, the other pair of pants, the co-pair of pants, whatever. The one that isn't multiplication. And that's because we can always take a, we can always cap with one of the elbow macaroni corresponding to the inner product and recover the other pair of pants. So knowing this for our TQFT means that we also know the adjoint. And the same thing is going to work for the disk. The incoming disk is the identity, or it maps 1 to the identity more precisely. And that's what I said ZA should do to the incoming disk. And because of this, because I use the adjoint to define ZA on the outgoing disk, then, and I have this relation, this is equal to the outgoing disk, or sorry, the, then that also determines it for Z.
So what actually is this co-multiplication? Is this like inclusion of A into the diagonal or something? You should go to A tensor A, right?
Yeah. It's not, I don't think it's just inclusion into the diagonal.
Oh, okay.
It has to, because it has to do with the underlying, like it depends on the multiplication structure.
Sure.
But yes, it is a co-multiplication now. Brief digression, which I was going to mention. Or well, actually first, so, sorry, I'll get back to it.
Yeah, yeah,
okay. So what we've said is that Z and ZA agree on all objects, on all closed 1 manifolds, and they agree on the 4 generating bordisms. Maybe I wave my hands a little bit, but this argument allows you to show that they're the same. So Frobenius algebras are two-dimensional topological quantum field theories that are oriented, which is, I don't know, I think it's pretty cool. Okay, any questions right now? And then I'll take Dylan's. Okay. So one cool consequence of this is that we define Frobenius algebras to be things with a multiplication and an inner product, very algebraic. But what I have here is I have a co-multiplication, which goes from A to A tensor A. And it, so, like I mentioned, this in general depends on the multiplicative structure, but this means that a Frobenius algebra is a co-algebra, which is the same thing as an algebra, but the axioms are turned around. It's both an algebra and a coalgebra. And this is nice and surprising, because we started out with something which was not a coalgebra a priori, and we ended up concluding that it must be a coalgebra in a natural way. That is, Frobenius algebra homomorphisms are coalgebra homomorphisms. So you might ask, okay, algebra, coalgebra, is it a bialgebra? And the answer is no, because the bialgebra identity is not a Bordism identity. It requires breaking something. And you can write that down and figure out why that is. And it's a cool thing to play with.
What are some other...
Okay, any other questions at this point? I'll end with one question of my own, which you guys might enjoy playing with if you like this stuff. So let's say I have a closed surface. So for example, I could take the sphere, I could take the torus, I could take various fancier versions of the torus, which have more holes. I don't think they sell these at Ken's Donuts, sadly. So these are bordisms from the empty set to the empty set, which means that this is a linear map from the real numbers to the real numbers, which means it's multiplication by some scalar. So given a Frobenius algebra, I define some topological quantum field theory. Can you describe this number lambda in terms of the multiplication, inner product, and identity? So this is an interesting, this is something that's fun to play with, because if you do this for specific TQFTs, sometimes this is useful. Like if I take the TQFT associated to the group algebra for Frobenius algebra, then these numbers can be computed in a couple different ways using a couple different decompositions into pairs of pants. And when you do that, you get some of the basic identities of representation theory, like the fact that the sum of the squares of the dimensions of the irreducible representations is the order of the group, and a couple other things, depending on which of these surfaces you start with. So that's all I have to say. I hope you enjoyed this excursion into the topology that builds up some algebra. So thank you.
We're going to write a minute.